Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
Well, welcome back to our second hour here on Circles of Change. Another sunny day in Tucson. We can do it. It's a real pleasure for me to welcome into the studio Bill Welter from Adaptive Strategies. Good morning, Bill. How are you today?
Good morning, Zara.
Real pleasure. And Bill, in fact, we said earlier, he's our evacuee from Chicago cold weather. So welcome to the new home. It's going to be home in due time, right?
Well, actually, we've had a place here for 3 years, and we're kind of gypsies at this point. We're back and forth.
That's right. That's how it works. Let me introduce Bill. He's a consulting educator based between Chicago and Tucson, as we said, with over 45 years of experience spanning four separate careers, a career in the military serving our country, engineering to my heart, consulting, and education. As president of Adaptive Strategies, Bill has served clients across a very diverse set of industries spanning aerospace, apparel, automotive, education, financial services, pharmaceuticals, restaurants, professional services, and more. He specializes particularly in the application of critical and strategic thinking for business leaders and professionals through writing, speeches, workshops, team facilitation, and one-on-one coaching. Bill is also a fellow in executive education at the University of Minnesota's Carlson School of Management and a faculty member of the Institute for Management Studies. He has an undergraduate degree in socio-technical systems engineering and a master's in business administration. And Bill is also the author of 4 books. He was the lead co-author of The Prepared Mind of a Leader, 8 Skills Leaders Use to Innovate, Make Decisions, and Problem Solve, Mind Lab, A Place to Think, a follow-up to his workshops on critical and strategic thinking. And by the way, the first book was 2006, the second book was 2008. No surprise, 2010, another book. He co-authored Rethink, Reinvent, and Reposition, 12 Strategies to Renew Your Businesses. And then in 2011, an e-book about right-sizing your business, Breakthrough Strategies to Create a Flexible and Profitable Business in Any Economy. So all these additional children you've added to your portfolio in writing books, right?
Yes, I think so.
Indeed. Well, 4 careers. Walk our audience through that in appreciation. Again, you're a really logical guest for our show as we talk about those different things can become our building blocks for a future we couldn't predict.
So the 4 careers very quickly are 5 years in the Marine Corps.
Great.
Which I consider probably my formation life, a formation of my life.
Mm-hmm.
5 years doing honest-to-God engineering. A bunch of years doing consulting work. And then the shift over to something that I have a hard time describing. Sometimes I say I'm an educator. Sometimes I say I'm a consulting educator. But basically, I make my living running workshops and writing and doing things such as that.
So, and a wonderful way to then give back to a variety of organizations, because you're learning and doing simultaneously through the eyes of your participants in your workshops.
Oh, I love workshops. I'm never going to retire.
Well, you know, and that's the R word. I always say we don't use that particular version of the R word on this show. We talk about it in terms of reinventing, reimagining, and in fact, to the point of your one book, of Rethink, Reinvent, and Reposition, of course.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's great. Well, but you, this idea of you solidifying this last career, you had told me you had your McDonald's story of many years. You want to share that with us?
So I'll do the short version of this thing. But
sure.
The short version is, at one point in time, I had called upon McDonald's headquarters trying to sell them some work. And they said, well, thank you very much, but we don't really appreciate education. We appreciate experience. We want people who have basically ketchup in our blood.
This said by a company that has their own university, by the way, in Chicago.
Which was kind of fascinating to me. But
yes,
they were all about operations at that point in time.
Got it.
So a few years after that, I got a call, though, from the Office of Succession Planning at McDonald's. And the question was, can you teach somebody to think better? And I said, yes, you
like
can.
Like any good consultant, you say, of course. And
of
then
course.
You go, oh, crap, what did I just say?
Yeah. But then I said, you know, this is kind of insulting in the sense of you're a very, very successful corporation. You are just on fire. And they said, enlighteningly enough, they said, but our world is changing. Mm-hmm. And we've got some people who are in a groove, and the groove is so deep, it's a rut. Mm-hmm. And that led me to create a workshop for them where I thought I would do one. I have now done over 60 around the world for them. And so they're a wonderful client. But they were the ones that got me into this world of being the consulting educator. Because the answers to most corporate problems are in the managers. They've got it. They just need to bring it out, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Whether that mean that needs to be enabled by the culture, inspired by a manager above, behind, below them, or they also need to know how to evoke it themselves and take the jump.
Oh, absolutely. And that, you know, that's one of the problems that I think some of our younger people are going to have is that we have spent so much of our adult life dealing with our children and trying to protect them, mm-hmm. That they've grown up trying to minimize the downside of their decisions rather than maximizing the upside of their decisions.
Well, in fact, many of them, and I've had members of the younger generation come on the show here, and they've said, well, my biggest problem is I feel like I've got to get it right the first time. No, truly, that there's so much weighing on this important decision, you know, of which college I should go to or which soccer team I should be part of or which car I would ultimately invest in, that they feel I've got to get it absolutely right. And therein lies an ability then to really stall fast and get frozen in place.
You know, so if you go back to the question of my four careers and I say that the Marine Corps was the foundation career, the reality there was some decisions you make are life and death. And everything else is just an inconvenience.
Right. Or as my brother who was in the U.S. Navy, they used to say there's a rule of fives. Is this going to make sense, make any difference 5 years from now, 5 months from now, 5 weeks, 5 days, 5 minutes from mm-hmm. now, to try to put things in perspective? But, you know, Bill, having said that, though, your work in consulting across so many different companies on the strategic side, you coined that phrase, the prepared mind, after Louis Pasteur.
Yeah, I was going to say I didn't coin the phrase. I came across that phrase during my consulting years, and I would sometimes be sitting in a conference room, and I'm looking across the table, and I've got somebody. I'm looking at this person. I say, you know, she's got her MBA from Harvard, and then next to her is a guy who's got his MBA from Stanford, and I know they're smarter than I am. Why did they need help? And then I was looking for skills.
Mm-hmm.
How do they use their mind? Was the key piece that's there. And then Louis Pasteur's quote came across. And Pasteur was kind of a fascinating fellow in as much as he discovered how to deal with anthrax, and he discovered how to deal with rabies, and he discovered how to deal with silkworm disease. And at one point in time, he was accused of being lucky. And he said, I was, but I was ready for it.
Yeah.
And that whole issue of chance favoring the prepared mind is good and bad luck is going to cross everybody's path. The question is, will you be ready for it?
And, by the way, oftentimes, are you preparing without even knowing when and how you're going to use it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's just kind of being mindful of life, I think, at times.
Yeah. The writing of your first book, you were the lead co-author for mm-hmm. that particular book. Was it that you found yourself just teaching and teaching and teaching and people saying, you know, Bill, you ought to write a book? Or what was the spark that got you on that path?
Well, here's the fascinating story. The prepared mind concept came to me during my consulting years, and I ended up writing a white paper for it, and I ended up running a workshop at Northwestern University, and based upon that workshop, I got an email one day from a literary agent in Boston, and she simply said, "You don't know me, but I saw the workshop. What a great topic for a book. If you're interested, we're interested." Well, you've had authors on your program.
Absolutely.
Having a literary agent reach out to you is like being hit by lightning.
You got it, because usually the opposite is the case, and authors talk about being rejected 45 to 55 times in the process.
Oh, yes. And so, I went home to my wife, and I said, "Dear,
do you think she's the real deal? Should we check her out?"
That's exactly it.
Google the name. Is it?
And I said, "You think I had to go for this?"
Did somebody put him up to this? You know.
And she said, "You know, you've been talking about writing a book for years. If you don't do this thing, you're stupid." So I went ahead and did it, and that was
a supportive spouse, as always, tells us straight out, "You will be stupid." Yeah. And so the response, the process of writing the book then, did it come to you fairly naturally then? Was it just been kind of, you just needed somebody to pull the cork off the champagne bottle?
Well, part of it was, I pretty much knew anecdotally the things I wanted to write about, but then the fear was, well, maybe I'm just some guy who's writing about what he's seeing out the window. So that's when I got a hold of Jeannie. My co-author, Jeannie Eggman, is a professor at Northwestern, and I said, Jeannie, am I just giving you anecdotal stuff, or is there anything really behind this? Mm-hmm. And she said, no, you're onto something. And then I said, do you want to co-author with me? And she said, yes, and we went on a tear for that one. So it was kind of fun.
That's great. And to always reach out with a partner that comes from a different part of the world, although you two have been connected in some way. Well, the subtitle of your book, of course, talks about 8 skills for leaders and this whole prepared mind. You want to touch on a few? Because we're not going to give them all to you folks, because you need to go to adaptstrat.com and order the book. But give us a few.
Cool.
To plant the seeds.
Well, so let me just be straightforward on this one. Of the 8 skills, and, mm-hmm. and I've had people say to me, oh my gosh, Bill, those skills are so obvious.
Yeah, right.
And then I say, okay, now think about it for a little bit and tell me which ones aren't used mm-hmm. in your business.
Mm-hmm. In your business.
And I've done these questions in Asia, and I've done these questions in Europe, and I've done these questions in the United States since the book came out. And I'll tell you, there's 3. And the 3 is, and for the listeners, this won't be a huge surprise, but in most businesses, most organizations, we don't imagine nearly enough.
Yeah.
Most organizations don't take the time to reflect
right.
and think back and say what was right, what was wrong, and most importantly, what was my role in that?
And then learning from it to go forward,
yep.
right?
And then the last one is the whole issue of we don't allow ourselves to be challenged often enough.
Because we're afraid of success as much as we're afraid of failure.
Oh, yeah, and it's kind of fascinating to listen to sometimes you talk to some senior executives and they say, oh, no, my door is always open. And then you go talk to some middle managers, and the middle managers say, yeah.
I won't go there.
That's right.
That other rabbit can go first.
So 8 obvious skills, but we don't imagine enough, we don't reflect enough, and we certainly don't challenge one another.
Well, and let's talk about this thing about reflection, because obviously that led then to your second book about the Mind Lab, A Place to Think. I mean, part of it, I think, is there's a lot of social pressure about doing, and that if you don't have a calendar that's completely gray with double booked meetings, then you're not viewed as, you know, in the game. Whereas not allowing ourselves time for the meetings after the meetings or the walk after the meetings, we're short-circuiting the process.
Well, here's one of the problems that we've done. We've had a 20-year love affair with trying to do more with less.
Yep.
And so for too many of our organizations, we've gone from, and it, you know, the term they'll keep, people keep saying is, we need to be lean and mean.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is at some point you start getting less with less.
You bet, you're losing your muscle mass.
Oh my gosh. And so we've become anorexic as opposed
right,
to lean.
Right, right, right.
The challenge for an awful lot of people is we just don't have time.
Yeah.
And we cut out the last, the most important part of thinking about what went right, what went wrong, and what was my role. And then I'll be the crabby old man on this one. So the crabby old man says, you know, every now and then I tell people who say they don't have enough time, I say, well, when you go home, do you turn on the television? Oh, yeah, I watch Dancing with the Whoever. And I say, well, you know, maybe you ought to take a little bit of time with the TV off and just think.
That's a scary thought.
Well, yes. And I've got a client, though, that he runs a family-owned business. He knows he's responsible for the future wealth of his family. And he spends time, he schedules time to think.
You bet.
So we need to reflect more than we do. And sometimes it's uncomfortable because we would love to blame somebody else, but sometimes you look in the mirror and you say, no, it's my fault.
So am I correct in saying that you're having written your first book, The Prepared Mind of a Leader, and recognizing that right there at the epicenter, the 3 of the 8 skills that aren't done about reflection, is that what led you then to, you know, capitalize on your follow-up workshops on the Mind Lab, A Place to Think?
Well, that one is just, that was just fun.
Fun, yeah.
That was
yeah.
one of those things. I was taking a train back and forth to from a house into the city, and I would just doodle I would just write in a book. And so, you know, it's like, so what if Batman were as a business leader? Wow.
What would he do?
Mind Lab, what was Batman's belt look like? You know, he had all the coolest gadgets under there.
You bet.
And so it's just a little book with a whole bunch of just short pieces on it. You know, like Edison was stupid, you know, because Edison thought that the only reason for using a record player at that time was to use it as a telephone answering machine. He just didn't. He fought against the idea of using it for entertainment.
Right. And how many innovations are really not about the immediate use of it for a solution, but the application of the solution to another problem.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
That's obviously. In fact, that of course, is that word innovation comes then into your third book about in the process, though, the R words, not retirement, but rethinking, reinventing, and repositioning. And again, 12 strategies to renew your business. And this was done in 2010, of course, right in the midst of the ups and downs of the economic challenges mm-hmm. around the world.
The real challenge, the interesting thing about that book is just a blinding insight that both Leo and I had was that life cycles are destiny.
Yeah.
And every product goes through a life cycle, every business goes through a life cycle,
every person goes through a life cycle.
Oh my gosh, yes. And so you may need to reinvent your business, you may need to reinvent your products, you may need to reinvent your career.
So for those who aren't used to that term life cycle, why don't you give us just a 101? What do you mean by that?
Life cycle basically says for anything, there is an initiation stage. If it's a good idea or a good product or a good business, it'll grow. At some point in time, the reality is nothing grows forever, so it'll start to mature.
Mm-hmm.
And then sooner or later, you will get into the phase of it's going to go into decline. And the challenge is to see it before it goes into decline.
So you either decide to rev it up or to take it out of your portfolio.
Or just change it. It's just kind of fun watching some companies do this well, and some companies just
don't want to
lose it.
Don't touch the sacred cow. That's what made us great up until now, though. Exactly. We're speaking, by the way, with Bill Welter. His company is Adaptive Strategies. You can go to www.adaptstrat.com. Also, Bill's phone number, 312-802-6476. He has clients all across the country based between here and Chicago, Tucson and Chicago. So, Bill, that experience of this rethink, reinvent, reposition, the idea of applying life cycle management to life, I think in particular for those of us that are 78 million baby boomers saying, what's the big what's next? It's a methodology that serves us well, you know, on a routine basis to reflect on, isn't it?
Oh, goodness. So sometimes people say, well, you know, how would I apply this thought process to my own life? And I just simply say, all right, so now I'm a leading edge boomer. I went back to college after the Marine Corps. And I've got a degree in engineering, and then I'll turn to my audience or whoever I'm talking to, and I'll say, are there any IT people here? And I'll get a handle go up, and I'll say, look, if the speaking gig doesn't work out, I just want you to know I'm a great Fortran programmer.
Fortran, what's that?
Yeah, if they're old enough, they'll know what Fortran is. And then if they're a 20-something, they'll look at me with a blank stare because they don't even know the name of that language anymore. So if I had stayed as a Fortran programmer, I would just be so obsolete at this point in time. For most of us, we just need to continue to see what's next.
See what's next and be open to the possibility and put ourselves into an environment so that stuff kind of naturally bubbles up our way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your children now are in their 40s, if
yes.
I recall. And so the opportunity for you to stay connected or be hardline connected for people of multiple generations, I'm sure, are tenants of the kind of work you do.
Mm-hmm. Part of that is, if you're looking for advice, is you've got to kind of think young and play with technology because this current generation is connected electronically,
mm-hmm.
And so every now and then you just got to be able to, you know, the first time. So quick story, my nephew's going off to college a few years ago, and I said, you know, Tommy, you and me, we're going to stay together, bud. I said, you know, email back and forth. And he just looked at me and goes, Uncle Bill, dude, if you want me,
text me. That's right.
And so I had to learn how to text, which was like, how do you do this? My thumbs don't work this way.
Yeah, that's really, really true. Well, Bill, we mentioned that your fourth book was an e-book. So you shifted from the terrestrial books to the cloud-based books about right-sizing your business, breakthrough strategies to create a flexible and profitable business in any economy. What kind of reactions did you get to that book? I mean, timing is everything, isn't it?
Well, the timing is everything, and I will tell you, that book hasn't sold worth a darn.
So we got new strategies to deploy to help.
but it was an interesting book because it was actually the most fun I've had from a writing perspective. Mm. I got a call from my publisher back in September of 2011. And he said, I got a challenge for you. And I said, what's the challenge? He said, we just had an author drop out on an ebook series that we're doing.
Oh, and so you got a short window to
He said, can you do 30,000 words in 30 days?
Ooh, I like that.
And we were in Tucson at the time, and my wife basically said, I'll find things to do in the morning if you want to write in the morning. So I was writing in the morning, and she was finding things to do, and I cranked out 30,000 words in 30 days. The challenge there, though, is like for any book, the publisher only makes it available. The challenge then is how do you market it?
Exactly. Yeah.
And for me, as a leading edge boomer, I keep saying that, I'm not quite sure how to market an ebook. And so it's okay, it's doing all right, but it's not doing nearly as well as it should.
But the other piece of it is that anything, rather than let the committee in your head say this has been a failure, you're saying, okay, there's some major learning going on here, and how can I partner with other things that have been revealed? And maybe this is a segue to X, even though you don't know what
right.
it is, or you probably do. So what are you working on now?
Well, actually, I'm working on... One of the underlying themes in a couple of the books that I've done and one of the a lot of my workshops is a cycle that basically deals with how do you keep up with creative destruction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and yeah. The fundamental issue is sense, make sense, decide, and act. And it's a cycle of four-phase cycles, sense, make sense, decide, and act. And you've got to run it at the speed of industry change.
Mm, right.
And because if you don't, if your industry is changing faster than you're ready for it, you become irrelevant, which is terrible. But because it's a cycle, you have to do all four phases reasonably well. The one that interests me the most these days is the question of the deciding phase. How do you make decisions in time without perfect knowledge?
Mm-hmm.
And the book that I'm working on right now is dealing with the question of, what advice would you give to a young emerging leader for them to become a better decision maker? Because the world's going to be spinning up for many of them. And the thing that really has got me kind of interested is we know how to make decisions. I mean, I can pick up any, there's a whole bunch of books out there that's got a seven-step process or a five-step process. So I'm in the process of interviewing, judges, lawyers, accountants, doctors, a wide, wide range of people. And the whole issue is give me advice for a young person. And so if any of your listeners want to give me some advice, I will gladly take it.
Absolutely. Again, it's www.adaptstrat.com in the comments field to connect with Bill Welter. Well, I think the other thing that's emerging more and more importantly, and it comes back to your engineering mindset that you have to this advantage, is that quite often in that competency list for leaders, we haven't had two that have really surfaced in this day and age, and that is systems level thinking and pattern recognition. So, in other words, do you know really what you're seeing? And whether that be the pattern recognition across multiple decisions that you may have made that did or didn't go well, but also thinking in terms of the unintended consequences as well as the intended consequences.
Oh, absolutely. And pattern recognition is the fundamental basis on how people who are making life and death decisions do it. Emergency room doctors, neonatal care nurses,
right. They're
looking for patterns.
Looking for patterns, exactly. Which, by the way, that's why it's kind of dangerous when we all walk in with our own, you know, Wikipedia information to tell our doctor what to do. That it might not be the smartest way. It could spur the conversation a different way.
Oh, yes.
That's great. Well, Bill, what an exciting time for you, too, that you're continuing on both the writing journey, but also complementing that with workshops and connecting with people across multiple generations.
It's fun.
Yeah, that's great. Well, again, Bill Welter, his company is www.adaptstrat.com. And Bill, how is it you think you've changed the most by helping other people change?
How have I changed the most? Oh, good grief. I think I've stayed younger.
Sweet.
I think I've stayed younger. I look in the mirror and I kind of figure, well, what's my dad's face doing there?
Yeah, or who changed the mirror and put a picture there as
That's
well?
Right.
And the prospect of you continuing this work from the consultant educator, I think is a brilliant, as you say, it might be hard to describe, but therein lies the opportunity to impart wisdom, for others to take it forward, not just to find solutions necessarily.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, we'll put again Bill Welter at AdaptStrat.com. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Sarah, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.